It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And stick around, because a little later in the show, we will be joined by Dalton Del Don of Yahoo Sports, who will do a little more fantasy talk with Fred. The non-waiver trade deadline is not here just yet, but it seems like this is the way it's been the last couple of years. And I don't recall it always having been this way, but in recent years, teams definitely seem to get a head start on the deadline, and so we have a ton to talk about, even though we are still a few days out from the non-waiver trade deadline. And it starts with one of the more interesting and kind of surprising moves, actually. A move that I think everybody would have seen coming 2 weeks ago and found really surprising when it actually happened, and that is Eduardo Nunez to the Red Sox. And it affects fantasy players in two different ways, and we'll start with Nunez himself. He is hitting for average. That's one thing he's always done. He can get base hits. He doesn't hit for a lot of power. Hasn't been stealing as many bases lately, and I don't really like his chances to steal a lot of bases with the Red Sox. And he goes from a solid, secure, everyday job to an unclear role. Red Sox are saying he's going to play, but it's not entirely clear how much or where he's going to play. So how big of a hit? Because to me, it seems obvious it is at least something of a hit. So the question is, how big of a hit does Nunez's value take by going from an everyday role with the Giants to an uncertain role with the Red Sox?
Yeah, I think it takes a hit. I'm going to guess. How about this, Matthew? I'll throw it back to you for a second. If I said he starts four games a week on average the rest of the season, do you think that's appropriate, or do you think it's higher or lower than that?
I think that's a good and conservative number. Like, I don't think he's going to vanish. I don't think he goes to being a bench player. I just think he goes from being a guy who you know the manager is writing in every day to a guy that you're not that sure of. He could have stretches where he starts every day. You know, they've got some questions, and it would not be shocking to see Bogarts go on the DL and see Nunez get some time at shortstop. Dustin Pedroia certainly has some stretches where he could use a breather, and we still don't know how committed they are to playing Devers. So, you know, I don't think he's going to vanish. I don't think he's going to go to playing twice a week. To specifically answer your question, I think that might be a smidge low. You know, I think that it's not, again, it's not that he's going to vanish. It's just, it's uncertainty. And so you bake some uncertainty in, even with the somewhat improved lineup that he goes to. And the Red Sox are not what they've been, certainly not what they were last year. Like I said, I think it's a slight ding. I don't think it's a huge ding. I think it's a slight ding. And I'm kind of wondering how much you dock his value.
Yeah, where I was going when I said it, four starts a week, and I like that you said maybe I was a little low. Maybe we say four and a half starts a week, yeah, or something, because if everybody's healthy and Devers is on the roster, which isn't a given for the rest of the season, but let's say Devers sticks on the roster, then I think four starts a week is probably about right. But I would say four starts a week, and then the odds are there will be some stretch during the rest of the season where either Bogarts or Pedroia are out of the lineup for an extended, a DL stint, even if it's a brief one or something like that. Like Nunez can also play in the outfield if they needed a replacement for an outfielder at some point. So the Red Sox lineup, although it isn't what it was last year, is still, I believe, still top 10 in the majors in scoring, right around 10th, kind of moves day to day. And the Giants are right near the bottom. So in four to five starts a week with the Red Sox, he can probably compile as many runs in RBI as he could in a full-time role with the Giants. And he can hit just as well with the Red Sox as he could with the Giants. So, and I don't see any reason. He hasn't been stealing bases in July, but I think he'll steal bases again. So I don't think this is much of a ding like you do. I don't think this is much of a ding for his value. And maybe there's a buy low opportunity here if the Nunez owner in your league is seeing moving from a starting role to a reserve role and is willing to sell him on the cheap.
And see, I think this is going to depend. Like, look, if you're listening to us, you're probably playing in a relatively serious league. But I think in some places, in some casual leagues, you may find people with the opposite. Again, we have hopefully a wide range of people listening to us. But in your more casual leagues, I think there will be some people who think, you know, the Red Sox traded for this guy. They want him. It's the Red Sox. He's going to a more productive lineup, and there might even be a sell opportunity there. I think you need to read who you're playing with. I think if you're playing with Sharks, then it's the other way around, and you very well might have a buy low opportunity. But I think you kind of need to read, because there's a lot of playing Eduardo Nunez right now in fantasy is a little bit like playing a poker hand. You've got to read the other players as much as you're aware of the card that's in play. The other half of this, of course, is Rafael Devers, who we've talked a lot about in recent weeks. And about probably 3 weeks ago, I said, yeah, I'll believe it when he gets to AAA. Well, he spent 9 games in AAA, and then he was in the majors. And there are really two questions about him. And one is, does he stick? Because it's still not a certainty that he sticks. It's still entirely possible. I don't think it's likely, but it's possible that when the Red Sox play their next game, he's not on the 25-man roster and he's back in Pawtucket. I think it's more likely that they find another way to fit Nunez on the roster. And so your two questions are, one, how much do you buy the playing time? And I think to me the answer is, if he stays, he's going to play a lot. If he's on the roster, he's going to be the third baseman against right-handers and maybe some other at-bats, the occasional start against a lefty. But I think that's the main role for him if he stays, is third base against right-handers, which is pretty good. And then two, what do you think he does if he plays? I'm not that convinced that he's going to hit for average right away. He does put the ball in play. He's not a guy who struck out a ton in the minors, but he's also a guy who 282 last year, 288 the year before that. He's very young. I think the power is real, and I think he's going to hit some home runs. Those doubles turned into homers, as they often do with young hitters this year. So I do think that the power is real, but I would be a little skeptical on the average. You offered me 280. I would take the under on 280 if he's playing, though if he's only playing right-handers, that might help that. But I'm thinking more in the 260 to 270 range, but I wouldn't be shocked at all if he hit 10 homers from here to the end. How much do you like Devers, knowing what we know about him right now, both ability and opportunity?
Yeah, and I mean, the addition of Nunez cools me on Devers a bit, but not totally. And I have an interesting take on him. So with the way the Red Sox are constructed right now, if I was in a league with Fab, where you have to bid on on these call-ups, I would bid less on him now that they've traded for Nunez than I would have before, because he's now more of a playing time risk. At the same time, if I'm in a league where you can just pick players up, I'm more likely to want to pick up Devers right now than I was before, and I'll explain why. Because they have Nunez now as a replacement option, I feel as though Devers is either going to hit well and stick in the majors and be their third baseman most days, and Nunez is going to be a utility player, or Devers is going to be batting 140 in 2 weeks, and they'll send him back down and say, well, we gave him a shot. He's not quite ready. He's still got a great long-term future, and we'll just plug in Nunez as our third baseman, and maybe we'll bring Devers back and give him, some more chances in September. So as a fantasy owner, you'll either get a good Devers or no Devers at all, but not a bad Devers, which is sometimes a little reassuring. So that makes me quite interested in picking him up if I don't have to give up a lot to do it in that type of free agent format. If I'm in a format with Fab where I have to spend a lot on him to compete with people in my league, and I know there's some weekly leagues with weekly Fab, he's available this coming weekend in most of those leagues because he wasn't available last weekend in a lot of them. Now I'm a little more hesitant to spend a lot on it because there's that possibility that I spend a big portion of my budget and then I don't get much in return. So I have a weird kind of take on him that's changed a lot based on them getting Nunez. They also still have Brock Holt, so it wouldn't hurt the Red Sox to put Nunez in as their third baseman at some point. They still have Holt, who's like a really nice super utility player.
I think the other thing with Devers that gives you some optimism, if you can sort of react quickly, and as you said, if you don't have to bid a huge amount of a budget to get him, particularly if you're waiting to see what else may come in the next few days, is that to some extent you could make a case that Nunez increases his chances of success. If he is just going to face right-handers, that decreases the chance. One of the things that can happen to a young hitter, a young lefty, runs into three or four left-handed starters in a week,
has a 2-for-20 week, hurts his confidence. The club looks at other options. They think about sending him down. That's not really likely to happen. He is probably going to be put in positions to succeed. So the raw counting numbers may be a little less than if he was just going to get run out there every day. But the chances of him succeeding, I think, are higher if they can sort of pick their spots for him and say, you know what, we don't really want you facing this particular lefty today. It is better if we just give you the day, put Nunez in there. I think that there's a case to be made that he may have a better chance of succeeding with the addition of Nunez. We move on because there's a lot, and we probably took too much time on that, but it is a big topic. Abisael Garcia on the DL, it's slumping. I'm not the biggest fan of his anyway. I don't entirely buy it, and we're seeing that over the past month or so. Is he a guy to hold on to, or is he a guy that you're willing to part ways with if somebody else is more appealing out there?
Yeah, I think I'm open to parting ways with him in the shallower leagues. I mean, people will see his current stat line and think, okay, well, he's a must, you know, hold while he's on the DL, even in a shallow league. But so much of his production came earlier in the season. And this is someone who has a long-term track record of not being especially productive. He wasn't hitting well in July. I'm not saying he won't come back from the DL in a few weeks and hit well down the stretch. It could happen, but we have a pretty long career track record of him not being a fantasy difference maker. And this season, like, he was on pace for a little more than 20 home runs, which for an outfielder in 2017 isn't great. So really, a lot of it was tied up in his value was tied up in some batting average, some RBI. The White Sox lineup doesn't look like it's going to be great down the stretch since they're kind of selling off pieces right now. So I think that maybe more 10-team and possibly even 12-team if your DL's full. Or you don't have DL in your league, like, owners should think maybe about letting him go. I'm not sure if it's a move that you'll really, really regret in September.
Whit Merrifield now has 164 big league games, almost exactly one full season. Over those two seasons, because, you know, I'm a little skeptical about what he's doing this year at 28, but maybe you split the difference and you get the real player. I think that's often a nice, quick, and dirty way to do that. Over a full season, 289, 13 homers, 72 RBI, 86 runs, 24 stolen bases. The point I'm making is that even if you were skeptical about this year, even if you're saying, look, he's over his head, he's due for a fall, if you take what he's done over a full major league season, that's still a guy that you want on most rosters. I'm with you. I don't entirely understand the hesitation to pick him up given some of the guys that people are holding on to play second base.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, this is an older player who's breaking out. And Rafael Devers, for example, his ownership percentage will just surge past Whit Merrifield. And I understand from one angle why that'll happen. But on the other hand, like, sometimes you can't look a gift horse in the mouth where Merrifield hitting well, he has speed, which is a coveted commodity right now in Roto League. He's hitting leadoff on a team with a lineup that's been quite productive of late, that's a contending team for a postseason spot. He's multi-position eligible. He's someone who I think more owners need to kind of wake up to, that he's someone that they should give a chance to. I don't believe in the power. Like, he's got 11 home runs this year in 83 games. Like, I don't think he's a 20-homer player. But I do believe in the speed. I think that across the full season, he can be a 20 or about a 20 steal player. And I think he can also be a 280 hitter. And as long as he's hitting leadoff, that means he can be on a pace, you know, from here on out, say like an 80 to 90 run scored type pace. So I think there's value there at the back end, even in a shallow league. I think it's time for more shallow league owners who are looking for steals to pick him up.
He is. And look, they're not entirely comparable players, but they're same position. He is, for example, at least in some places, less owned than Jason Kipnis.
Yeah,
I mean, you could DL Kipnis if you've got him, but if you're holding on to Kipnis and not using a DL spot on him, why in the world are you not dropping him for Merrifield, for example?
Yeah, and I think overall owners are not recognizing the value of steals in the current fantasy landscape in roto formats, and the value of someone like Merrifield who's getting you steals without just being a one-category player. Like, there's someone who's getting you steals and contributing at least a little power and hitting leadoff. Like, you don't have to use Jerod Dyson, who's just getting you steals. You can use Merrifield and get those steals and still get a nice batting average and plenty of runs scored and the occasional home run. And that, in this landscape, is really valuable.
Another guy, some other guys on that list, Starlin Castro, Ruben Neto, Odor, that class of guys. Are you parting with those guys to get him?
Yeah, I would. I would be okay with doing that. I think if Merrifield tails off, it'll just be in the power department. I feel like he's pretty, like, unless they make a trade or something in the next week, but I think he's pretty locked in at the top of that Royals lineup. So, you know, Castro was productive early in the season, but hasn't done a lot lately. He doesn't steal bases. His power is just okay. It's not great. Jerko's tailed off after a hot start. Odor has been, like, really inconsistent this season. You know, I think there's the opening. Like, all of those players are much more owned than Merrifield. Merrifield's playing much better than them right now and has a really nice role. So I think this is the time of year where you roll, where you just, you know, go with the hot hand. If this was May, I might say, oh, well, we better be a little more patient on some of these more established players. But it's late July. Like, there's only 2 months left. You might as well go with the hot hand for now.
Lewis Brinson is back. He was not great his first time around. There probably is an opportunity. He went deep the other night. I'm still a little skeptical on him in the short term. I like the player in the long term, but I'm a little hesitant. He hasn't, you know, hit really well, but it was the PCL, and more specifically, it was Colorado Springs in AAA. You know, he doesn't have that wow you power. He has some speed, but he's not a super steals guy. I certainly can see it. It wouldn't be shocking if he were really productive, but I'm not entirely convinced as to how he is a real fantasy asset in anything other than in a lonely leagues this year. Maybe a 15 team, but I'm just not. I'm pretty cool on him. Do you like him more than I do?
Well, I'm gonna say that I like him more than you do, because you're right. You are pretty cool on him. I could see him. And he could be a total zero the rest of the way. Like, he could be back in the minors any day. Like, if he doesn't hit well in the next week, if Keon Broxton just, you know, it destroys AAA pitching in the next week, like Brinson could be back in the minors. But as far as, like, a bit of an upside play, like, the Brewers have a pretty good lineup. They're in the race. I guess they could trade for a center fielder in the next few days. We haven't heard a lot of rumors in that direction. So this is kind of Brinson's shot. If he hits well for the next few days, he can maybe take that center field job and run with it. And what I could see from him, if he was playing well down the stretch, would be maybe a half a dozen homers and 8 or 9 steals, something like that, which in 2 months is not bad in a deeper mixed league. I don't think he's a 10-team league player yet, but I could see him for people who are looking for someone who could contribute kind of across the board and in a 15, and maybe he works his way into some 12-team leagues. I think then he could be an interesting guy, but there's a real wide range right now as far as what he could do.
We move to starting pitchers. Clayton Kershaw on the DL. Guy has been, in some formats, the number one most valuable fantasy player this year. So it's kind of a pickle to be in if you have him or if you're looking to acquire him. Where are you on the Kershaw question, essentially, as he goes to the DL, but there's still optimism that he's going to get maybe 6 starts?
Yeah, I think that Kershaw should be one of the most traded players in fantasy leagues, you know, right now. And the reason I say that, teams who own Kershaw, who have been doing a solid job managing the rest of their pitching staff, are probably doing really well in their pitching categories. Now, they could totally just choose to wait, you know, do your best without him, hope that you get a half a dozen starts from him in September and that he helps, you know, finish off winning a championship for you. But Kershaw owners who are doing well in the pitching categories could also look to move him to someone to get help in another area. So they should at least float him out there on the, you know, the trade market and see what they could get. Maybe they can get someone who can help them right away as a starter, but more likely they could get a hitter in an area that they could use some help. And then also owners who aren't doing so hot with their pitching, this is a chance to pick up, you know, arguably the best pitcher of baseball at a heavily discounted price. Maybe you hope that he comes back on the early end of his timetable. We saw that with Mike Trout, totally different player, totally different injury, but Trout came back on the early end of his timetable and owners who picked him up at a discount were probably pretty happy. So he also could be the kind of risk if you need, you know, a real boost for your pitching staff, you know, but you can't trade for Chris Sale right now, you can't afford that, you can get Kershaw at a discount. So, I mean, we don't know exactly how this is going to play out at all. He doesn't know how this is going to play out. But I think that there's a lot of room for owners to move him in leagues where he can help maybe a team that doesn't own him more than the team that actually does.
Kershaw has this year simultaneously cemented, if it needed it, his status as the number one fantasy pitcher and possibly the number one fantasy asset in baseball when he's healthy, while at the same time establishing that he may just have back issues. And one of those sort of old saws is that back problems don't really go away. They get better, but they don't really go away entirely. I mean, look at Randy Johnson, dealt with back issues virtually the entire second half of his career. So as we go into 2018, and look, I know it's a trade deadline, but I think it's worth asking. You brought it up, and I think it's worth asking. As we look at 2018, if you were looking at early draft lists now, with 2 years in a row of the kind of ailment that tends to recur, is Kershaw still the clear-cut number one fantasy pitcher for a 2018 draft?
Yeah, I think he's not. And I think that if Max Scherzer finishes the season healthy, makes all his starts, you know, pitches well down the stretch, which if he's healthy seems quite likely, I think Scherzer is. The difference between Kershaw and Scherzer in – there is a difference between Kershaw and Scherzer in skills, but it's getting pretty small, and Scherzer gets you so many strikeouts. If you – I mean, Kershaw can start next season healthy, but with 2 years in a row of back injuries, like, he's just going to be a significant injury risk throughout the season. So I think if I was drafting for 2018 right now, I would take Scherzer ahead of Kershaw. And like I said, I don't think I'll change my mind as long as Scherzer finishes the season healthy, because the basic premise that Kershaw has missed a big chunk of the season 2 years in a row isn't going to change. Chris Sale,
right, and the thing is, it's not that he sprained an ankle 1 year and then hurt his knee the next year. It's back 2 years in a row, and that really is worrisome. There are just certain sort of, for me, again, I talk about various sort of injury beliefs I have, and another one of them is that, you know, I don't worry excessively about back injuries in season. I think you tend to come back. I think it's something they can treat. I do worry that they tend to recur, and so I think you have to kind of bake that in when you look at Kershaw going forward is, you know, do you figure that in a typical season you may be looking more at 28 starts than 33 or 34, and I think that's a totally fair thing to consider.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if Kershaw comes back and pitches really well down the stretch in the last few starts of the season and is great in the postseason. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't change the fact.
No, not for this question, not to me. No, I totally agree. Because I'm not docking him that I think he's going to be compromised performance-wise. I have full confidence that he comes back really effective, that he's great in September, that he's great in October, and that he'll be great when he pitches next year. It's just the simple fact of, I think that you have to now account for the possibility that he's a guy that may be a 28-start pitcher instead of a 33-start pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy, and I hate making this segue, but it is the cleanest way to connect them, another guy that just kind of can't shake the injury question. Steven Strasburg goes on the DL. They are saying all the right things. They believe he is going to miss one start and be back in 10 days. But it's kind of a weird, they're calling it an impingement. They're just, it's a weird, everything they're saying about it is kind of hard to entirely understand. They may have full understanding of it. It's certainly possible. I'm not saying they don't, but it's not a typical thing, and that makes me a little nervous. What's your level of confidence right now that Strasburg, whatever number of starts he misses, whether it's one or two, or more, but that when he comes back, he stays in the rotation for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I'm fairly nervous, just because this is someone who, you know, last season 24 starts, the season before 23. I would gladly take the over on two missed starts the rest of the season. And he's also had stretches the past couple years where, with injuries creeping around him, he's pitched poorly for stretches of time. And then he's had stretches where he's been great. But he's had those stretches where he's pitched poorly, and I worry that we could be running into one of those stretches. Also, the Nats have that really big lead in the division, So they could afford to shut him down for 3 weeks, 4 weeks at any time if they want to make sure that he's totally ready, you know, for the postseason. So if I'm a Strasburg owner, I'm fairly worried that I may not get as many starts as I hope for late in the season, and worried that I might get, you know, a high 3 ZRA instead of a low 3 ZRA. And if I'm looking for a pitcher to buy low on, I don't think this is the guy for me to target, even though I know the upside is really high. Are you more optimistic, or do you share, you know, kind of my stance?
I think
on
it's totally fair. Again, I think that if they just said, look, he's got back spasms, he'll be back in 10 days, I'd say, okay, that happens. Again, you know, turned his ankle. There are any number of things where you can tell me he's going back in 10 days, and I'll say, yeah, that sounds good. He'll be back. He'll be fine. This is one of those kind of vague, weird things. I also wonder, and I want to be really clear here, because this is something that can be twisted in a lot of ways and that people can say is an insult or hinting at something, and I don't mean it that way at all. I think there are people and there are players who are faster healers and who are slower healers. And I think it's fair to wonder if Strasburg is not one of the faster healers. And I'm not saying anything about his desire, about his toughness, anything like that at all. But, you know, there are guys who heal quickly. Albert Pujols, at least earlier in his career, was a ridiculously quick healer. His body just healed. It seems to be that way with Mike Trout. There are guys who are that way. There are guys who don't heal as quickly, and I think it's fair to wonder whether Strasburg is not a quick healer. Again, I apologize for the redundance, but I want to be really clear. That's not a value judgment. That's not a toughness question. It's not a desire issue. Some guys just don't heal as quickly, and if you're one of those, then that should probably be considered. We move on, and a topic we talk a lot about, especially this time of year, is if you need ace production but you can't get an ace. Is Rich Hill currently on that list of guys that maybe you deal for thinking you might get ace production over the next 2 months without having to pay Scherzer sale prices?
Yeah, I think he is, and it's about that risk management. I mean, he was he's risky at any point in time, but he was really risky when we were talking about him in March. And he's kind of done everything that we expected. He spent some time on the DL. He had a few rough starts kind of when he first came back, but now he's been really, really good. And at the beginning of the year, you were worried about him making 30 starts, and now all you need from him is about a dozen starts the rest of the way and for him to keep pitching the way he has of late. And his strikeout rate's really high, and his ratios lately have been really low. So I think for, say, a Strasburg owner who needs to buy low on a pitcher, or just someone who's trying to save their pitching staff and needs a shot in the arm, I think he's an interesting target. Or a Kershaw owner maybe who isn't doing as well in their pitching categories as they should have with him anchoring their staff. I think Rich Hill's the interesting buy low. It's risky. You know, he could go on the DL tomorrow, and neither one of us would be surprised. No one would be surprised. But if he stays healthy, you only need him now to stay healthy for 2 months, and that's less risky than needing him to stay healthy for 6 months.
And the Dodgers don't need to push him. Now, that does affect his value some, you know, but they can give him an extra day here and there when they need it. There's no urgency to make sure he gives them 7 innings every 5 days. And while, you know, you'd love for an ace to go 7 innings every 5 days, he's a guy you'd rather not have to ask that of. So if they can sort of, if you can be confident they can manage him, I think that increases his overall value. One more guy that might be a sneaky ad, a guy that's been really, really good lately, a guy that people were really excited about a year ago and then kind of wandered in the woods for a while. Aaron Nola has been really good. The Phillies are not good, and that certainly affects his value some, though they've been getting good relief work, so they should be able to hold on to his leads. Is Nola a sneaky ad for you?
Yeah, I think he's another kind of, discounted ace, and maybe he won't be an ace the rest of the way, but he's got ace possibilities the rest of the way because that's how he's been pitching the last about 7 or 8 starts. So I think he's another one like Hill where, you know, you don't have to pay a massive price, but he could give you massive results. And maybe the fact that he's on the Phillies helps you get him at a little more of a discounted cost because his owner's thinking, well, he's not on one of the better teams in baseball. But, you know, his performance last night against the Astros really punctuated to me the fact that he seems to be all the way back from what was basically a calendar year of ineffectiveness and long-term injury problems and more ineffectiveness. Lately, he seems
seems to be back to what he was early last season when he was really dominant for a stretch. So, I mean, I don't know if he'll be able to pitch the rest of the way he has the last few starts, but I think he could be good enough to get you a low 3 ERA, and that would be really valuable down the stretch in a season like this one.
We will talk closers in just a moment, but before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the StatCast podcast, a show dedicated to the analytics that drive the front office decisions in the modern game. It's hosted by Mike Petriello and Matt Myers. Last week, they dug into the data to break down some of the league's most intriguing trade targets from a StatCast perspective and find the best new home for each one. If that's something you want to hear about, you can download the show on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts by searching for StatCast Podcast or by going to StatCastPodcast.com. We move on to closers, and hey, what do you know? We're talking about the Nationals. Sean Doolittle has two saves since the trade. He also allowed three runs in the ninth inning yesterday. It looks like he's the guy. As we've talked about, Dusty Baker's not really a committee type of guy, but I'm not certain for two reasons. One, because I think they're still nervous enough that, you know, another bad outing and they could make an adjustment. And two, I'm still not entirely certain that we're going to get to Tuesday without the Nationals adding another relief pitcher. So do you think Doolittle is the guy from here on out, or do you think that there's still some shuffling yet to come in the late innings in Washington?
Yeah, I feel as confident as I could reasonably feel, given that it's the Nats in 2017 with their bullpen, that if they don't trade for anyone between now and when we do this podcast next, that he will be their guy. I think they do have that reverse bullpen where in most bullpens they need the lefty for a specialist role. They have a lot of lefties, so they kind of need the righty in Madsen maybe as a specialist role when they need a right-hander in the earlier inning, and they can put Doolittle in the ninth. So I think Doolittle's good enough to hold the job if they let him run with it. I'm concerned that maybe they'll trade for someone between now and Monday. But if they don't trade for someone by then I think that Dusty will maybe give Doolittle like some rope. And you're right, he gave up three runs last night, but it didn't affect the outcome of the game and didn't even really come close to that. And we've oftentimes seen closer types not be at their sharpest when they come in lopsided games. So I would like to own Doolittle because the upside of having the Nationals closer down the stretch is really high. So, and if I have to regroup in a few days when they trade it for someone else, then so be it.
Give me a closer in waiting that you have your eye on with the unfortunate fact that Kyle Barraclough is headed to the DL, and so he's probably now off that list.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to keep Barraclough kind of on the periphery, at least, of that list where, you know, if they trade A.J. Ramos and Barraclough's DL stint is fairly short, I think that he could still come back and end up being a closer. But he was probably number one for me. Now I'm probably going to make Shane Green number one. I don't think Green would be an awesome closer, and I don't think he's a lock necessarily to be the Tigers' closer if they trade Justin Wilson. But I'm going to make him number one just because the rumors have been pretty heavy on Wilson. Trading him seems to make a lot of sense for the Tigers. I feel like there's a lot of teams that could use him, and I do think Green's probably the best option in that bullpen. So he's number one for me. Do you share my optimism a little bit on Green, or is there someone else that you have more of an eye on?
I think that's reasonable. I wanted to touch on actually somebody I'm not crazy about, somebody else you mentioned, Brad Brock. Though, I should be clear on that. I'm not crazy about the reason. I think it's less and less likely that Zach Britton gets traded as he scuffles toward the deadline, but at the same time, I think that could also increase the chances that Brock becomes the guy for saves in Baltimore even without a trade. I think that's a situation to watch. The thing, there's sort of three outcomes, and one is that Britton gets traded. One is that Britton gets right and remains a guy in the ninth, but the in-between scenario is that he scuffles, doesn't get traded because nobody wants to give up what it's going to take for a guy who's struggling and pitches his way out of the ninth inning. So I do think you have to watch it. I think that's one situation where even if we get to the 31st and Britton is still there, that doesn't necessarily mean that Brock won't be the guy at some point. Does Tyler Clippard hold any intrigue to you at all? Swarzak is gone, but Tyler Clippard has been rough.
Yeah, no, not at all. I just, to me, the White Sox are now the number one bullpen to avoid. I just don't see it. I don't see anyone in that bullpen who I would want to own or who I believe is there could be a successful closer. I don't think they really care that much about having a lockdown closer the rest of the season. I don't know how many games they'll win the rest of the way and how many, you know, save chances they'll give their closer. I mean, outside of an AL-only team who's in a really tight saves race, other than that, I wouldn't touch any of them. Do you have any more optimism on Clipper, or are you feeling kind of the same?
No, I'm with you. I'm not in on that. We moved to the two-star pitchers, and you gave me a nice list this week. Definitely a lot of guys I like on here. Mike Foltynewicz at Philly and home for the Dodgers. Charlie Morton, home for the Rays and Blue Jays. Jose Urania, home for Washington and at Atlanta. Marco Estrada at the White Sox and at the Astros. Patrick Corbin at the Cubs and at the Giants. Nick Pivetta, home for the Braves and at the Angels. The only one on that list that I really don't like is Estrada. And even as much as I like the White Sox matchup, the at Houston scares me so much that I just can't go there. I really like Foltynewicz. I know the Dodgers are good, but the Phillies aren't. I like Morton for two home starts, even though the Rays are fairly tough offensively. They also strike out. I don't mind Urania. I think probably Foltynewicz is my first choice off of that, but I like nearly all of them.
Yeah, I like this list. For me, Morton's the first choice. I like Morton a lot. Just most weeks, I think I would love to own whoever is starting twice for the Astros. They're just going to should get tremendous support.
Yep.
And two home starts, the Jays haven't been hitting. I like that one. I like Foltynewicz. The Dodgers lineup gets talked about a lot. I know the Dodgers are one of the best teams in baseball, but their lineup isn't one of the higher scoring ones in baseball in July. So I know small sample size, but when we're looking for things for a reason to pick up a two-star pitcher, I think that can help when the other matchups are Phillies. Corbin might be my next one just because the at San Francisco is really appealing. So if he can just get away okay in the one at Wrigley Field. I tried to find some this week where, you know, the one matchup's really good and the other one not so much, and kind of weigh the options. And I agree with you on Estrada. He just was a little better last time out, but not good enough. He could even struggle against the White Sox because we've seen him have starts where his control's been bad, where he's been giving up a lot of home runs. Yeah, I just can't do it.
It's the home runs that scare me. That is he absolutely could run into four or five home runs in a start in Houston, and that just ruins your whole week. This is the part where I step aside. Fred will be joined by Dalton Del Don of Yahoo Sports, and they will take it home. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.
Hey, everybody. So as Matthew mentioned, we're back, and I'm here with Dalton Del Don of Yahoo Sports, here to talk to Dalton about his awesome Yahoo Friends and Family League team, which is crushing the competition in our league this season. And I wanted to talk to Dalton about some of the key players on that team. First of all, Dalton, congratulations on your great start in the league so far, two-thirds of the way through the season. How are you doing it?
Thank you. Yeah, it's still a long ways to go. One of the things I must point out, as I did last time I talked to you, is I'm well over the pace to finish. There's an innings cap, and I'm plus 74 over, so that should be noted that I'm going to, you know, probably lose some in the wins and strikeouts down the stretch. But one thing I will say about that is that my K rate is really strong. So 981 strikeouts in 946 innings. So I love that fact. So again, last time we talked, as I said, part of that strategy was I'm going to suffer some injuries because I know I have a lot of injury-prone pitchers. And sure enough, I have. Rich Hill's dealt with some stuff. Jake Odorizzi just went on the DL, and I've dropped a couple other fringe guys. So we'll see how that plays out. It's not exactly like a weekly format. People will be able to catch up on the innings. But at the same time, you know, Chris Liss, our colleague from RotoWire, I made a big bet with him before the season, and he kept saying, oh, don't look at the standings now because I'm way under the cap and you're way over. But on the flip side of that, he might hurt his ERA and whip trying to, you know, play the streaming game, even though in September often you're facing AAA lineups. But I might have to block him there a couple things. So that's one thing to note, the difference in the innings cap. But so far, yeah, even with my first-round pick, Manny Machado, not coming close to his ADP, so far, so good.
Yeah, now, I like some of the things you touched on there. For people who are listening who are in those innings pitch cap leagues, is it typically your strategy to get out ahead of the pace and figuring you'd rather maybe just
not use your starting pitchers kind of the last couple weeks of September rather than having to scramble to grab, you know, whoever you can get in September? Do you find that's a common strategy for you?
Honestly, I didn't really have a strategy either way. I definitely want to get enough pitchers to where I'm on pace and don't want to scramble, that's for sure. But it wasn't a set-out strategy before the season at the draft to get way ahead. Although there is some merit to that because if I'm, you know, nearly 100 innings over, then it would be, you know, you could just trade a guy. You could trade a starter, and you lose less in that way if you bank those innings. So that is a kind of a side advantage. But that was not an actual strategy I entered. I want to make sure I got enough to keep the pace. It just so happens that they stayed a little healthier than I thought, and I'm ahead of the pace. But I'd rather be over than under just because, like, you know, you might end up hurting your ratios having to stream guys.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I mean, I was briefly over and then fell under, and I was like, oh, okay, no big deal. I'll catch up later. But now, as my pitching staff has had some injuries, and I've closed the book on Aaron Sanchez, and I've closed the book on Marco Estrada, not due to injury, but ineffectiveness, and then my staff starts to look a little thin, and now I'm thinking, you know, how am I going to catch back up to the pace I need to be at? Because I'm not going to get there with a bunch of relief pitchers that I've grabbed just to fill slots. So I can see, even though people, you know, are wary of going over and like, oh, what if I have to sit one of my pitchers and just not use them late in the season when they have a nice matchup? I can see, I think I haven't played in a league like this one before with an innings pitch cap and daily roster transactions. But so I'm kind of just getting my feet wet with it this year. But for people who are listening, I would not be afraid to get over that inning pitch pace.
Yep.
and figure it out in September, because you might not have what you thought. And Dallas Keuchel was another one for me. I've had to leave him on the DL this entire month, and you know, I was expecting, so there's more innings I've fallen off the pace, and replacing him with pitchers on waivers in a 14 team league, you know, isn't that easy.
Yeah, a couple things about having too many, or quote unquote too many, starting pitchers. Injuries inevitably happen. So, like, you may look at it and be like, boy, if everyone throws 180 innings, I'm going to be over. But injuries do happen. And as you said, a 14-team league, also it's daily transactions. But with owners into this league, like, there, you can't – if a guy's named a closer, they're picked up within 3 minutes, you know. So people are actually into it. So it's don't just assume that there's going to be viable starters the next day. And also, if you have a surplus of starting pitchers, you can really get picky with matchups. You know, you can bench guys in not great matchups because you're fine with the innings, and the fringe guys, you just wait until they're at home against a weaker offense. So you can really benefit with your ratios in that manner as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. And sticking with your pitching staff for a minute, so Chris Sale is by far, you know, the most valuable player on your team this year, and the anchor of your staff. Do you think that him and Max Scherzer, with the way that hitters have been going this year and the way that pitchers haven't been going this year, is it possible that Sale and Max Scherzer are maybe the two most valuable players at any position down the stretch in 2017?
It's entirely possible, especially in an innings cap league where the K rate matters more than the volume. Kershaw's obviously hurt. I've always been a starting pitcher guy. I've been willing to be aggressive, drafting them in the early rounds, typically more so than the industry. I mean, Sale, though, I didn't expect this. I mean, he goes from one hitter's park to another, and he leads the American League right now in innings pitched, ERA, whip, wins, and strikeouts. His WAR in Fangraphs is 6.6. Scherzer's is actually 4.4. I know that doesn't matter in fantasy terms, but the next highest position player is Altuve at 5.6. So he's a full win above any other player in baseball, which is just remarkable. Career high 15.8 swinging strike percentage. He's been a monster, and arguably, I mean, if I had a vote, I'd probably know people tend to not like pitchers because they have their own category, but I mean, he certainly has a very strong argument to not only win the Cy Young, but also the American League MVP.
Yeah, I think I'd be very interested to see where Sale, Scherzer, and Clayton Kershaw, although Kershaw's his own entity now with the back concerns, but I'll be very interested to see where Sale and Scherzer end up in drafts next season.
I'll have them all three ranked in my top 10, no, assuming, you know, they're healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, because when the dust settles on this, and I try not to close the book on a season when there's 2 months left, but I think when the dust settles on this season, we'll see that, you know, having that type of a pitcher is just tremendously valuable. Now, it also will depend on, especially with Sale more than Scherzer, but it'll depend on whether, you know, the individual drafter believes that he can repeat this career year or not. Scherzer's done it so many years in a row that it's becoming the norm for him. So, but it should be interesting to see how that changes drafts for next year, because I think with 2 years in a row of this big power surge, it's time maybe to get used to it.
Yeah, and remember the first half of last year, everyone was talking about how Sale was being a more pitch-to-contact guy. Boy, that certainly was short-lived. I hear you, though, but, man, if he continues this pace this season, he can regress 20% and still be a first-round value. That good.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of someone who's been really good of late, Wilson Contreras has been red-hot of late, and when we look around at the catcher position, and the Cubs have been red-hot of late, where would you rank him for the rest of this season among catchers? Like, is he there with Buster Posey and with Gary Sanchez?
Yeah, it's funny. He got off to kind of a slow start. I was a little frustrated. And right now, he's the number four ranked fantasy catcher on the year. He's hitting cleanup in a loaded Cubs lineup. So I did the numbers here just so I knew we were going to talk about him. So over his last 32 games, that's 117 at-bats. He's hit .325 with 11 homers, 31 RBI, and a 1.058 OPS. I mean, that is just monstrous from the catcher position, especially in a season in which it's been even more of a down year than usual. So he's been tremendously valuable for me, obviously. Salvador Perez is having a really good year. Real Muto is having a really good year. I still really like Sanchez. I mean, remember, he missed a month, and he has more RBI than Buster Posey, and he has, nearly 80 fewer at-bats. It's just the situation in which he's in. I mean, the Yankee Stadium compared to AT&T Park, and Posey just doesn't bat with nearly as many runners on base in front of him. So I think Contreras is right there in the top five, and you could even argue there's a big three with Posey, Contreras, and Sanchez. It's too bad Schwarber's really disappointed, but Contreras looks like the real deal.
Yeah, he does. It would be interesting. Then you'll never have to make this decision, but if the trade offer came through in our league saying Posey for Contreras straight up, that would be a really tough call, because Posey is as consistent and talented as he is, his value is probably a little bit capped by his supporting cast for the rest of this year.
Yeah, it really is. I'm a Giants fan. Like I said, I love him. He's a terrific pitch framer, and batting average is really underrated. I mean, you get a catcher hitting .328. I mean, that's really valuable. But the park and the situation around him just simply makes, in fantasy terms, he gets dinged. In real life, he's definitely the most valuable. But I would have to think long and hard about that offer, because Contreras is just in such a better situation. And remember, if you look at his overall numbers, he wasn't hitting cleanup all year. He's hitting now behind Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. I mean, it really doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, Posey might be, now we're off topic a little bit, but Posey might be, to me, the player most in fantasy who has the smallest gap between his ceiling and his floor, where he's just so talented that it's hard to imagine him having a bad season, but then the supporting cast, the home park, like it's hard to imagine him maybe having a monster season. So the ceiling and the floor to me with Posey are very, very similar. They're almost like the difference between 280 and 320 and the difference between 14 homers and 22 homers or something like that, which is a pretty narrow range. Want to stay with someone who's been red hot for you. And Matthew and I have already talked about him on this edition of the podcast, and that's Aaron Nola. Do you think this is going to continue? Like, for example, if I gave you 3.35 ERA the rest of the season, would you go over or under on that?
I'd probably go slightly under. There's been some past injury concerns with him. By the way, real quick, you know that Posey's never hit 25 homers in a season? That's pretty crazy. So difficult. He's another guy on fire. I looked this up as well. So over his last seven starts, 48.1 innings, 1.49 ERA, 0.97 WHIP, 60 Ks. He was a little bit frustrating, but I stayed patient with him. And people have loved him as a prospect. 10.4 swing and strike percentage. Doesn't pitch in the greatest environment as far as run support. But, I would take the under on that ERA. I'm a believer. I think he's the strikeouts were always an issue, too. They didn't think he was going to be elite in that area. But, boy, he's really missing bats lately. So, I'm gonna ride him. He's not someone I'm looking to sell high.
No, I agree with you. I'm a big Aaron Nola fan. For example, I have David Price in that league who has, 10 times more name value than Aaron Nola. I think I would rather have Nola the rest of the season. I think I think Nola's pitching really well. He's been consistent. I think that run support and those things can sometimes be a little bit overrated as far as let's first start, especially in a year like this one, let's first start with a pitcher who can pitch well, and then let's hope that his team gives him the run support to get a win. I'd rather do that with the offense going the way it is right now around baseball than take a questionable starter and assume he's going to get run support. And someone else who's red hot, now I can see why your team surged up in the standings because there's a long list here of players who have been red hot for you lately. Gerardo Parra is crushing it lately. He's on a team that's, arguably the best spot in baseball, for hot hitting. They're on the road this week, but they'll be home again soon. Do you think for people who are listening, is Parra someone they should invest in and expect him to stay in the starting lineup the rest of the way? Is this kind of a just enjoy it while it lasts kind of thing? I don't think there's a sell high here because I don't think he has enough name value probably or long-term production to get much for him on the trade market. So kind of where are you with Parra going forward?
Yeah, I actually picked him up right when this hot streak started, basically. I just noticed that he was available, and I said, there's some upside. Because daily transactions, I could just play him in Coors, and obviously the huge home road splits, 733 OPS on the road, 1.090 at home. I mean, that's a superstar, obviously, 423 batting average. Remember this 2 years ago last year when he first joined the Rockies, everyone was kind of high on him entering drafts, and he suffered injuries and really disappointed at the plate. But you're right. I don't think you could bring back a ton in the trade market. He's currently owned in just 39% of Yahoo leagues. But Ian Desmond re-injured himself. David Dahl seemingly is going to take a ton of at-bats in AAA before they recall him. So I especially love Parra in like I said, daily transaction leagues or, weekly if they have a seven-game set in Coors. Play him at home, and maybe he's playing a bit over his head. He's probably not a true 359 hitter, but he's getting caught a ton too. He's 0-for-4 on the base pass this year, but love that situation. So, yeah, I'm riding him while he's hot and playing him in Coors every single time he's there.
Yeah, and I think some people maybe have forgotten that the Rockies have a lot of money invested in Parra, and he is someone who's had hot who has had hot stretches where he hits for average before. So this isn't like it's surprising in the sense that he hadn't hit well for Colorado since he joined them last season and everything. But overall, it shouldn't be totally shocking. This is someone who has shown the ability to hit for average at times before. He's on a team that presents a really hitter-friendly environment. And as far as his playing time going forward, they have a lot of money invested in him, and they're in a postseason spot right now. I don't see any reason they would ever consider keeping him out of the lineup as long as he's playing well down the stretch. They're not playing for the future, and he's someone who they were counting on, and now they're finally getting what they wanted from him.
Yeah, he's even hitting cleanup lately. So I think he should definitely be owned in far greater percentage than he is right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at Carlos Gonzalez struggling, and if you're filling out that lineup card down the stretch, and you have an extra outfielder at times, I don't think Parra is the guy you rest, unless he comes back to earth. And we have seen that before. I think I don't have it right in front of me, but that stretch where there was a stretch a couple years ago where he was really hot, and then he was traded, and then he cooled off, and quite dramatically, quite quickly. I mean, he could cool off, but I would be inclined to ride this out and hope that he can stay in your lineup the rest of the way. Now, the last player I want to talk about is someone who definitely hasn't been hot, because even on your surging team, there are some players who aren't pulling their weight, and that's Jose Peraza. Now, I wrote this yesterday, and I haven't checked last night's box scores, but he hadn't stolen a base since June 20th. Are you close to giving up on him? Like, even in a 14-team league, are you close to, would you consider dropping him? Would you recommend other owners drop him, or do you think he's going to come back around?
It's pretty ugly. He went 0-for-4 last night, so he still did not swipe a bag. I'd consider it. Certainly in 12-team formats, you could certainly do better now. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. I mean, 591 OPS. I didn't expect him to hit 324 again or even close to it like he did last year as a rookie, but man, he attempted 31 stolen bases and just 241 at bats. So even though he's caught 10 times, I just love the aggressiveness on the base paths, and he's young, and I thought maybe he could get a little bit better, take a few more walks, but that's certainly not the case. He's taken as many walks so far this year in more than 100 more at bats than he did last season. So it's interesting that I actually have all of these Reds middle infielders. I have Zach Cozart, whom is currently hurt. So that's interesting. Peraza was getting benched there for a while. So I was definitely considering dropping him, even in this deep format with few options on the waiver wire. But he's hurt, so Peraza's moved to shortstop, getting some playing time. So I'm going to remain patient for the time being just because I have Cozar. And then the other guy whom I picked up, who's been one of the biggest surprises in my eyes in all of baseball this season, is Scooter Gennett, who has an OPS over 1,000 with 17 homers and 200 bats against right-handers this year. So I've just been platooning him. And obviously that Cozart's played over his head and really well for me. So I'm just keeping my trio of Reds middle infielders for the time being, and we'll see how long Cozart is going to be sidelined.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, I mean, you can see here, I was like, some of our listeners who pay attention every week will notice I was winning this league earlier in the season. You've jumped way out in front now. I slipped all the way down to fourth. And when I looked at my players in the last 30 days, I saw a lot of batting averages that start with a one. And, you know, a lot of home run totals that also started and ended with a one. And it's a really interesting to see the ebb and flow of a league where earlier in the season, it was my hitters who were really hot. And now they've cooled off. Now yours are really hot. And, you know, here's hoping that they stay that way the rest of the way and that you can close this thing out. I'm not sure if I'm coming back. I think maybe I could rise up a little bit, but I don't think I'm getting up to where you are. And I think you're pitching be over the limit right now with your innings pitched. I think it's going to work out just fine for you. So, Dalton, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And I'll make sure our listeners stay up to date on the progress of your team the rest of the way.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And another thing just to point out, I've just caught myself saying how many people that I added in this league. So, and then I'm realizing that I didn't even draft Justin Smoke either. And he's been a total fantasy star. So for everyone out there, you don't necessarily have to win your draft at the draft. You don't have to win your league at the draft table. Just stay aggressive on the waiver wire. And thanks for having
me. Yeah, with this season, with the amount of surprise power sources, I think this is really driving home the point that, you know, being aggressive on your waiver wire is definitely the way to go. I think the biggest mistake maybe some owners, including myself in some leagues, make is sticking too long with someone who's underperforming when there are better options out there. Thanks again, Dalton. And in the words of Matthew, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Dalton and Matthew, for taking the time to talk, and we'll talk to you next week after the trade deadline.